I call this meeting of the Committee on Higher Education, Finance, and Policy to order. Let be noted that we do have a quorum. Members, please review your packets. You will find the last meeting's minutes. There's someone to move the approval of the minutes of the 5th of March 2026 as presented. Representative Clemore moves to approve the minutes from the March 5th, 2026 as presented. All in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed, nay. Motion carries. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives. We appreciate your interest in participating in the legislative process. To assure everyone can view, hear, and understand present today's proceedings, we ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility through this hearing. For the safety, security, and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, Representative Paul Novotny, maintain control of these hearings and establish the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outburst, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in the walkways and aisles, or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any special accommodations, please speak with our sergeant staff who are identified by their gold ties. Chair Liebling.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I didn't mean to interrupt your reading. Oh. I have a question about the minutes.
Yeah, me too. Actually, I just caught myself.
Let's finish this and I'll go back to the meetings. Okay. Troopers and House security personnel are present to ensure everyone's security and safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits, which must be strictly observed. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for re-entry if to leave the room. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal of the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone has the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. Thank you for your cooperations. Going back in the order of business, Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Just looking at the minutes, I noticed that the date you said March 5th, but it says actually March 3rd on here. And I looked at my calendar. I believe it was March 5th. So I think the date on the minutes that we just approved is actually incorrect.
So if I could please reconsider.
Representative Clemore.
I move that we
Representative Clemore has made a motion to re-refer reconsider the approval of the committee meeting minutes as previously voted on. All in favor of reconsidering the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
We will now reconsider the minutes as presented. And what is the correction that needs to be made, Representative Clemore?
On the second line of the minutes, it says that the meeting was called to order at 1:01 p.m. on March 5th.
Representative Clemore has made a verbal amendment to the minutes to reflect the correct date, which should be March 5th, 2026, and also, okay, so March 3rd on the other line was correct. So that's the only thing that needs to be made. All in favor of accepting the verbal, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe this is what you were just saying and I didn't follow, but there is a line further down.
I don't even have.
Oh, no, never mind. That's March 3rd.
That
never mind.
Correct.
I know how to read. I promise.
That caught me too. All in favor?
Mr. Chair.
Chair Wolgamott.
The minutes I received, I'm not sure if they're from the March 3rd meeting and just were made in my packet or if these are the wrong minutes for March 5th, but the minutes I received in my packet for March 3rd have me as being excused, and I was actually here on March 5th, so I don't know if the minutes before me are the same minutes that all of you are looking at or what Twilight Zone I'm living in right now, but I just want to make sure that we have accurate minutes that we can all vote off of. Mr. Chair, can I please get a copy of the minutes that are before other members? Okay, thank you.
Back to the motion. Representative Claiborne moves that the minutes of the meetings for March 5th, 2026, as amended, be approved. All in favor of this motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries. Representative Schultz, I see you there at the testifying table on House File 1323. I move that House File 1323 be sent to the General Register. Representative Schultz, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great to be back in front of the Higher Education Committee. So greetings to each of you members. And I just want to start by saying it's important that we have the right documents. The legal documents are important. So before I go any further, Mr. Chair, I wanted to ask if Co-Chair Wolgamott could assist me first for the appropriate terminology for proper respect today. Should I refer to folks as illegal immigrants, unauthorized aliens, undocumented non-citizens, or some other terminology today?
Chair Wolgamott, do you yield for the question? Chair Wolgamott.
Yes.
Chair Wolgamott will yield for the question. And do you have a response?
I will give you a response.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think point of order.
Chair recognizes Chair Noor.
Just wanted to raise point of order because it's a little bit confusing when we're not on the floor that we're asking members to yield for a question. And I think that is, those are things that we do on the floor. And if you need any assistance, we have the nonpartisan staff who can clarify things. And if you've got, if we have questions and if we think that you made incorrect, we may jump into the conversation. But at this point, I think asking a member to yield for a question is not in the appropriate setting in the hearing.
Mr. Chair,
Chair Wolgamott.
I agree with what my colleague, Representative Norris, said. I will ask that Representative Schultz use the term students when he is referring to students.
You'll have to repeat. Use what, Chair Wolgamott?
Students.
Students.
He's talking about students. He should refer to them as students.
Well, Chair Wolgamott, you would agree that we're talking about different categories and things of students. We need to have some way to differentiate between them. Would you agree to that?
Are you asking me to yield for a question, Representative Novotny?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, I'm asking you to yield to a question.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Wolgamott has the floor.
Representative Novotny, I asked if you were asking me to yield to a question. Representative Schultz asked how he should refer to the students that are described in his bill. And as the co-chair of this committee, I'm answering his question by asking that he refer to them as students.
Representative Schultz, did you understand his response?
I did, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Then begin your testimony, please.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So as we discuss House File 1323 today, I recognize that when I had House File 10 in front of this committee last time, the terminology that I used was questioned by members of the body, and I want to refer to them respectfully today because every person matters, every human has dignity, and I believe in that, and I hope that as we move through this discussion today that we can ground ourselves in that same common respect for one another and for the people who we seek to serve here in Minnesota. So with that today, Mr. Chair, America is in its 250th year, celebrating abundance, celebrating the blessings of this land, and we have an opportunity today to ensure a greater opportunity for Minnesota citizens and students here by ensuring that there is more money in the state grant program and the North Star Promise program for citizens, because currently today, approximately $2.7 million in the next school year would be going to people who do not have legal status, who are students at our colleges and universities across the state. So my bill seeks to clarify the eligibility requirements and ensure that tax dollars paid by Minnesotans and the taxpayers across the state are going to benefit those who have legal status as students in our state. With that, Mr. Chair, I'm excited to hear the testimony today to ensure that as we look at the state grant as an example that has a giant hole inside of it, that the dollars are reserved for citizens of this great country. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. The first testifier signed up is an Aaron Spafelda, Legislative and Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. Mr. Spafelda, please state your name correctly so I can get that right and begin your testimony.
Hey, committee members, Chair, thank you for having me. My name is Aaron Sepulveda. I have the privilege of serving as Legislative and Policy Director at the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. It is the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs' duty to inform the legislature on issues relevant to the state's Latino community. It is with that expertise that we express our concerns about the proposed legislation. Especially now, the Latino community that we interact with largely wants immigration discussed and addressed with dignity and nuance. In surveys of hundreds of community members and interactions with dozens of community organizations, this desire is consistent. And it is our appraisal that this legislation does not consider the issue of immigration through that lens. Firstly, it ignores that most DREAM Act applicants were likely brought to the U.S. as children. Undocumented adults come to the U.S. to seek immediate economic opportunity. Often they lack the qualifications or proof of qualifications for higher education programs, as well as the time to pursue those degrees. So it is non-native children of these immigrants who would most likely benefit from state financial aid. These are kids who had no choice in their parents' decisions to migrate. And these are kids that, like any kids, will have the childhood experiences that make Minnesota home. Secondly, this ignores that undocumented children who grew up here are likely to remain here and contribute to their communities. Remaining here is a result of experiential, cultural, and relationship ties. This is their home, right? But it's also due to a lack of mobility otherwise. So failure to provide advancement opportunities robs them of their potential and also limits the potential of them to contribute back to their communities. Finally, this legislation ignores that the current financial aid policy is a positive economic investment for the state. While we are all aware of the increasing cost of education in Minnesota, financial aid to undocumented students has a very small relative cost and high returns. We're talking about around 500 total students, less than 1/6 of 1% of the total enrolled students in the state in higher education, or less than 2/3 of 1% of all financial aid recipients. And these are going to be the professionals who would help offset Minnesota's labor market crisis. The share of retirement age of Minnesotans has increased by 50% in the past 2 decades and will increase by 50% more in the next 2. We're dependent on young, educated people to help fill in the employment gaps we expect to see and staff the emerging, especially high-skilled opportunities that we want to see. Plus, these will be high earners, earning potentially twice as much as their peers, resulting in a parallel increase to Minnesota's tax base, and again, among a population of people who are disproportionately likely to stay in the state. So in summary, by eliminating consideration of the unique circumstances of undocumented children and immigrant opportunities to contribute to the state, the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs is concerned that this legislation will erase the nuance and dignity our community members seek with respect to immigration status. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Elliot Lindsay, Treasurer, Minnesota College Republicans. Next up after that will be Jenny Lang.
Hi, I'm Elliot Lindsay, a student and treasurer of the Minnesota College Republicans. I'd like to start by thanking the committee and the committee chair for having us all here for testimony and for hearing this bill. I'd just like to start by saying that as a student, I constantly hear and experience all these, you know, repeating complaints that there are too much, you know, that you look at your bill for college and you always see something new tacked on there that you didn't expect, or that you know someone who's has great grades coming out of high school, great extracurriculars, and they just do not have any financial aid, and they are taking on loads of student debt in order to afford college. And, you know, I think a lot of people, not just conservatives, many people outside of politics completely wonder, why is this the case? And I think we can always look towards our grant program. As has been mentioned, this program has a, last I checked, a $102 million hole in it. And we need to take action now to patch it up. I see all the time blue-collar Minnesotans, students who desperately need financial aid, even people whose parents were on welfare who still are coming out of college, unable to find a good job because the job market is so squeezed right now, especially for entry-level positions. And what are they left with? They're just left with a massive amount of student debt that they cannot bear to sustain. And it's causing a lot of students, I think, to leave our state, and especially leave our state for more opportunity. I would also like to say that it is just unfair that given that there are so many Minnesotans who are genuinely in need that are not getting any or getting very little financial aid, that we are then giving priority to illegal immigrants, undocumented students, people with no actual legal status in this country, as opposed to first prioritizing our Minnesotan students. And I'd just like to end by calling for compassion. I think that it's important to have compassion for everybody, including undocumented immigrants, of course. But we can't let that get in the way of the number one priority of our state government, which should be looking out for Minnesotans first. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Jenny Liang, student. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the committee. I really appreciate this time today to testify in favor of House File 1323. I just want to start out by clarifying that I am the child of immigrants, and I've spent a lot of thought in this matter. My name is Jenny Liang. I am a recent graduate from the University of Northwestern St. Paul, and I am a research assistant for the University of Minnesota Law School. I would like to say that my dad, my parents are both from Shandong, China, a northern province by the Korean Peninsula. I come from a long line of immigrants, a long line of farmers. And my dad was able to earn his way to America through the EB-1A, which is the highest caliber of immigrants. So he raised us to pursue education and to contribute back to this amazing nation that we call home. I was able to graduate from the University of Northwestern in 2 years through PSCO at the age of 20. And I was also extremely fortunate to earn a lot of merit-based aid as well. But I have a lot of friends who weren't able to do that and are under a significant amount of student loans. I was looking at the University of Northwestern's average tuition. It is about $40,000 a year. For the University of Minnesota, it's approximately $20,000. So a lot of these students, ranging 18 to 22, have a lot of aid that we're unable to saddle. As a teaching assistant, I made approximately $10 an hour. I worked in fast food, making about $15 an hour. So just this immense amount of aid is really hard for families. Our grant deficit, we have over $100 million of just a shortfall for this biennium. And without action, it would lead to an over 30% reduction in aid for students. So for people already facing a lot of debt, this is going to be a bigger blowback. And even though it's really important that we are compassionate to immigrants, we also have to realize that as American citizens, our people come first. And that if we're unable to take care of our own citizens, we can't adequately serve the people who are not citizens. So after we're able to take care of ourselves, then we can take care of other people. I would like to end by saying that tuition averages are only rising and that we need to find a way to address this issue. I really appreciate this time again, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Last up is Ashley Davis, student.
Thank you. Hello, Chair, please, and members of the committee.
Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, Chair and members of the committee. I am Ashley Davis. I'm a student at the University of Minnesota. Minnesota's financial aid programs are funded by taxpayers and were created to help Minnesota students afford higher education. At a time when many students and lawful residents are struggling with rising tuition and student debt, those limited resources should be prioritized for students who are here legally. As a college student, I see how competitive financial aid already is. Many Minnesota students are working long hours, taking out loans, and still worry about whether they can afford to stay in school. When state-funded aid is extended to individuals who are not lawfully present in the United States, it raises the fundamental question of fairness to the students and families who are paying into the system. This bill restores a simple and reasonable principle. Taxpayer-funded benefits should follow the law and prioritize those who are legally eligible. Minnesota students and families deserve to know that the financial aid programs they fund are serving the people they were intended to serve. I respectfully urge the committee to support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify at this time? Please go up to the podium, begin your test, or date your, introduce yourself and begin your testimony. You'll have 2 minutes.
Either one. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Chair Novotny and members of the committee. My name is Molly Lloyds, and I am the policy director with LEAD-MN, the statewide student organization for the 26 colleges in the Minnesota State two-year community and technical system. I'd like to read a statement from our student executive board today. As the elected student leaders of LEAD-MN, we represent the interests of over 100,000 fellow students, advocating for college access and affordability for all, and advancing equity and opportunity in higher education. We believe it is vital for the voices of student groups to be asked for, heard, and considered in the decisions that affect us. LEAD-MN is committed to dismantling barriers and advocating for policies and practices in higher education to ensure that all students have what they need to be successful. HF 1323, in prohibiting undocumented non-citizens in Minnesota from eligibility for state financial aid programs, presents such a barrier. Therefore, we oppose the bill. Two-year public colleges serve as pathways to higher education for historically marginalized, under-resourced, and underserved students in Minnesota. This includes, but is not limited to, students of color, first-generation students, undocumented students, LGBTQ plus students, students of low socioeconomic status, students with disabilities, veterans, and formerly and currently incarcerated students. For too many of these students, systemic barriers continue to prevent them from achieving success. State financial aid programs are an investment in Minnesota's present and future. Denying access to North Star Promise and the state grant program based on immigration status is a step backward to this very body's dedication to our state's workforce goals of increasing degree and certificate attainment in adults to 70% and threatens positive but fragile enrollment increases after steep pandemic decline. The return on investment in a well-educated workforce is high. College graduates drive economic growth, earn higher incomes, generate support jobs, and increase tax revenue. Two-year community and technical colleges, in particular, offer hands-on education in high-demand career programs, which are crucial to the foundation of Minnesota's economy, now and in the future. Educating immigrants is a beneficial and forward-thinking investment for all Minnesotans. And beyond statistics, our classrooms, campuses, and communities are stronger and richer because of each student, regardless of their immigration status, who strives to attain higher education and the opportunity it provides for a brighter future. Our education is enhanced by the discussions, perspectives, and experiences our fellow students bring to the classrooms, workshops, labs, campus clubs, and student governments at our schools. This is also ROI. We have never wondered or cared about the immigration status of our classmates who, just like us, are showing up, working hard, learning, leading, and pursuing their goals and dreams. Preventing immigrants from accessing vital financial aid disregards a generation of talent and innovation that can contribute to our communities and our state's long-term prosperity. Students who have grown up, graduated from high school, and contributed to Minnesota deserve equal opportunity to succeed and pursue higher education, regardless of immigration status. LEAD-MN recognizes the importance of economic and social benefits of an educated population and opposes HF 1323 as it presents a short-sighted barrier to access and affordability. Thank you for your time and consideration of student perspectives as you hear this bill. Sincerely, the LEAD-MN Executive Board, Sudi, Marco, Alex, and Rose.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other public testifiers? Seeing none, members, questions? Chair Wolgamott.
Thank you very much, Chair Novotny. I have two questions, and I'm wondering if there's someone from the Office of Higher Education who could come forward to answer them.
Yes, it depends on the question, but yes, we can.
Thank you.
Please step to the table and begin your testimony after you introduce yourself. Well, it won't be testimony. You'll be answering the question from Chair Wolgamott.
Well, thank you so much. My first question is if you can give us any number for how many students at currently enrolled in Minnesota colleges and universities that this House file would impact.
For the record, my name is Nikki Oliver. I'm the Director of Government Relations and Community Engagement for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. Yes. And Megan might know a lot sooner than I can, but I do have those numbers up. And 2026 are preliminary numbers currently. But specifically, now that I think about it, because this is all financial aid, correct? This bill impacts all financial aid. We actually would have to follow up with that number, or do you have it? You have it? If you want to... Okay, it's in the fiscal note already. So I think the number he did mention is the number of students impacted and about the amount of students impacted.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe I received a fiscal note in my packet. If there's any way that we could, members of the committee could get that so we can see these numbers, I think it's really important that when we're considering voting on legislation that we have the numbers available. Thank you.
Mr. Savory.
Chair and members, as an update, House File 1323 does have a pending fiscal note. I believe the testifier was speaking to information they've entered into the fiscal note system. The fiscal note is yet to be finalized, so it's preliminary at this point, and I can notify the committee when it's complete.
Chair Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My next question was going to be, well, so is there Representative Schultz, or does anyone have a number of, and Representative Schultz, if you mentioned this in your presentation, I apologize for missing it, but what is the number of students that this would impact?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for the whole committee's purposes, thank you, Chair Wolgamott, for the question. In the fiscal note that has been referenced in our conversation was a portion of House File 10's fiscal notes. As you're seeking that, that is on file, so you can check it. It has it for the full biennium. While I don't see the specific number of students, I have the cost. So and I'm going to use fiscal year 2027 for the number. The total cost is $2,762,000.
Chair Wolgamott.
That's all for now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a similar question as Chair Wolgamott, and I look forward to getting the fiscal note. So the $2,762,000, I'm sorry, Representative Schultz, was that for biennium or for annual?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Robbins. That is just for the next year, so just fiscal year 2027. The previous year for fiscal year 2026, the total was $2.477 million.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, and if you don't have it, it's fine, but I hope to get it through the fiscal note or whatever. But it would be helpful to see the breakdown between how much of that is North Star Promise and how much of that comes from the state grant. So we know if we do this, where does the money flow back to?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, for clarity for everyone's purposes so that you can go to it right on your computers or your devices right now, this is under the House File 10 fiscal note. It is pages 39 through 45. And so to answer your question for you, the state grant is the one that is the most impacted. So speaking specifically to 2027, for the state grant, that number is $2,621,000, and for the North Star Promise, it was projected at that time for 2027 to be $23,000.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Yes, that's very helpful because I think our, at least speaking for myself, the biggest priority this session is how are we going to fix the hole in the state grant, and I I don't know if they're all running around today as a day on the Hill or something, but I've met with three students today about that just prior to committee. So I know this is of top of mind for all of our students who are facing cuts to the aid they were already promised. So I think this is an important way we could take a look at that. Thank you.
Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I find it unusual that we are being asked to go to a different bill to look at a fiscal note for information. That is not the general practice of the committee. We are being given numbers over $2 million, $2.5 million with no substantiation behind those numbers. It's just, I don't know how many of these students are attending private college. I don't know how many of these students are attending. I don't know how many students we're talking about. We're just being given numbers. I think we should be having this conversation with full data in front of us. And as such, I think we should set this on the table for now and then discuss it on a day where we have the data in front of us.
Thank you, Chair Cleburne. Representative Cleburne, and that is going to be the motion for the day. We've already, in light of everything that's been discovered and in deference to the fiscal staff, that is the decision that we've already moved to. I will be making that motion, and
okay.
Representative Cleburne, we hear bills all the time waiting for the fiscal note. Do you have any other questions?
Well, the numbers are being cited as fact, and as we all know, when you read a fiscal note, the numbers are in the assumptions, right? I mean, Chair Rarick taught me that years ago. Look to see what the assumptions are. And we are talking about a bill that would deny Minnesotans, people who live in our state, the ability to attend college with state resources. And we don't have the data in front of us. So I find it most unusual. And as a chair, I don't believe we should be passing bills out of committee without fiscal notes.
Representative Cleburne, as I said before, I don't know how it's done in your committees, but in public safety, we hear bills all the time without the fiscal note while we're waiting, especially towards the end of session, when, like right now, when they're getting backed up and you hear the bill waiting for the fiscal note after it's laid over. Do you have any actual questions for the testifier?
Well, yes, then please, may I? Representative Schultz, welcome to higher ed. Can you please tell me how many students are represented in this $2,621? And of those students, can you tell me how many would attend public institution and how many would attend private institution?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not have that data at hand.
Representative Cleburne.
I think my point is well made. Thank you.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you, Representative, for being willing to answer questions. I'm confused by the language, otherwise not lawfully present.
Representative Schultz.
So here's my question. Youth, unaccompanied youth who arrives in our country as sex trafficked, is removed from the sex trafficking situation and starts the process for special immigrant juvenile status. Eligible, not eligible?
Is that a question? The end of your
That's the question. Are they eligible or not eligible under this definition of not otherwise lawfully present? Because on average, an SIJIS application takes 5 to 7 years. So sex trafficked unaccompanied minors who are removed from the sex trafficking space, eligible or not eligible, while in application for SIJIS.
And are we done now?
Yeah, I wanted to answer the question.
Representative Schultz has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hicks. I couldn't answer with specificity as to the exactness of your question, but I would be I'd be willing to assume that might not impact any single one of the potential students impacted here.
Representative Hicks.
There are a ton of SIJIS students in Minnesota. The only aid they're eligible for is the state aid. So special immigrant juvenile status is a special status reserved for children who prior to the age of 17 are brought to this country and are victims of horrific abuse. It can be physical abuse, it can be sexual abuse, it can be abuse of some kind by a stranger, by a trafficker, by a parent, by a guardian. In all of those cases, they have to apply for a status change. They do so under SIJIS. That process, depending on how many visas are available from their home countries, can take 3 to 7 years. During that time, they do not have work visas and they cannot work, but they can access state funding to receive higher education. And because the process takes so long, a lot of times they start the SIJIS status when they're in middle school or high school, when they are first discovered to be in these abusive situations. And then because the process takes so long, they are entering into adulthood without any opportunities to access education or employment except for this one option, which is why when I look at this language and it says not lawfully present, I want someone to tell me what that means.
Representative Schultz, I see that our fiscal person came back into the room. Would they be able to help you with some of these numbers or House research?
Mr. Chair, if we could just get an answer to Representative Hicks' question.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the situation that you describe, Representative Hicks, and again, if we bring ourselves and ground ourselves in compassion and humanity here, I think that what you described, and I understand that you're educating the public and you're educating the members around this committee about this circumstance, but based upon what you described to me, that would be someone who is lawfully present.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Hicks.
I want to be really clear. We don't pass legislation based on I think. We pass legislation based on definitions. And while people are in application, is that lawful or unlawful status? Because I heard you talk about citizens very specifically. And that there is a lot of space between I have a green card and I am a citizen and I am undocumented. And that space in between matters. That's the application space. That's the follow the process space. That's the go through the steps necessary space. And by your bill, I don't understand if that space counts. I want him to answer. What does this mean?
I don't want to cut you off. I'm trying to.
No, I appreciate that. I don't understand what this means. This is not immigration law language. So what is otherwise not lawfully present? Is the space in between when you apply for SIJIS or you apply for asylum or you apply for the abused women. Thank you. Thank you. VAWA. Like, is that space not otherwise authorized? We don't use language like that typically to decide status. So I'm trying to figure out what that means. Could you tell me
Schultz.
What it means?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hicks. And I appreciate your great interest in this. And it, potentially, as we move forward, this is a great opportunity for you and I to work together more closely on this piece of legislation to ensure that we get it right. But I will just point you to exactly the very line that you talked about at the beginning of your questioning, which was this, otherwise not lawfully present. The process that you just described to the committee is one which is a lawful process.
Representative Hicks.
Okay, thank you. So when people are going through SIJIS, they are not eligible for federal funds, they do not have Social Security numbers yet, and they do not have visas. So tell me, based on that, how you would have the department interpret otherwise not lawfully present. So is anyone who has filed application with USCIS to become lawfully present not impacted by this then? Is that what you're saying?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hicks. This bill speaks to the people who do not have legal status in this country. That's what this bill does. And to your question, the individuals that you are talking about are following a lawful process.
Representative Hicks.
So I'm going to ask the question one more time, and a yes or no will do. If they are in this country and have started the lawful process, regardless of which process it is, pick VOA, pick SIJIS, pick asylum, pick any of them, I don't care. And if they have filed that paperwork and they are in process, they would not be impacted by this bill? Is that what you're saying?
Representative Schultz.
While that is not a yes or no question, the answer is we are seeking for people to be here in the United States lawfully and legally, just like American citizens are, which is why the Minnesota kids who would benefit from the state grant program or from the North Star Promise Act should be the ones that receive the dollars that are allocated to it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hicks.
I'll just end with this.
Representative Hicks, if you could just give me a second. The financial staff is back. I don't know if he was in the room to start with when you began your question. Would you like to ask your question again? Or?
This isn't a financial question.
It's not a fiscal question. It's an immigration question.
You had some questions on numbers, Representative Hicks. And
Representative Hicks didn't.
The Chair Wolgamott.
No, I did not. So, okay. I will just end with this. When we're talking about statute and who's eligible or not eligible, we should define it in terms that are easily understood and interpreted. And immigration process is complicated. It's not as simple as legal or not legal. When you apply for a visa for a person who has been trafficked or horrifically abused, a child, under SIJIS, it takes 3 to 7 years from the time you submit the application until the visa is approved. The space in between, those folks are considered undocumented and in process. So this language about they're in a legal process is not immigration language. And we cannot make policy and rule based on that concept. So ideally, if we're going to move forward with something like this, it would need to actually define things in immigration language so we know what to do with it. I am not supportive of telling sex trafficked children and abused children that while we're working on their paperwork, they can't do anything.
House Research, Mr. Hopkins, you've been listening to the questions that they have and you're working on the financial note, I assume. Do you have any information that you could have to clarify the questions that Representative Hicks has?
Mr. Chair, no, I'm not an immigration attorney. Federal immigration law is very complicated, and the bill does not define or cite any federal immigration law, so I can't offer any further immigration or further information.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just have a few questions. Hi, Representative Schultz. I like when you talk about dignity of all people, so I appreciate you bringing that up. And so my questions are going to kind of center on that. First of all, I want to make sure we're coming from the same place of understanding how this process works. I don't think you've served on this committee, at least with me, so I want to make sure that I'm not assuming you know something that you might not. So can you tell me what you do or don't know or do or don't understand about how the students that your bill is targeting are getting or qualifying for the money that you are also targeting?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen. Eligibility requirements are at play for just about any program that the state of Minnesota has, including the state grant program, including the North Star Promise. And through those eligibility requirements, we would be able to effectively determine whether someone was eligible or not.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that answer. I was excited for you to remember our conversation last year on the House floor about this, because that's where I reminded you that these students are already going through that process. From what I'm understanding is there should be zero people getting this money because the conditions of getting this money are based on them having proven that they are going through the legal status that this country has laid out for them. And so that's what I'm like kind of confused about is in theory this is kind of a moot point because the only people who can access the money are those going through that process. So I will leave it to you to answer that. But I guess my second question that I would like to hear from you about is, you know, if your efforts are truly rooted in dignity, if that's the kind of starting point that we're coming from, truly rooted in emboldening and supporting higher education. I heard you say that you wanted to, you know, potentially this money could, if this passed, go towards North Star Promise, for example, right? And the state grant for that gap. Can you help me understand then, and Chair, you can tell me I'm out of order if you would like on this, but why you have bills to eliminate North Star Promise and to eliminate the Office of New Americans if we are truly operating from a place of dignity and honoring higher education?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do find it concerning that we have And frankly, I should keep my comments to the bill, Mr. Chair, because I know that's before the body. So I wouldn't want to go outside of the confines of our discussion today. And so I'll just center us as a reminder that we want to ensure that it is citizens and those lawfully present that benefit from Minnesota's tax dollars.
Thank you, Chair. So asked and answered that that's who's getting this money right now, because that's what the current law is. So I guess I don't understand why we're going through all this kind of dog and pony show here, but I maybe want to talk about it offline, but I do want to hear how you reconcile operating from a place of dignity and saying that, and then offering to like eliminate the offices that support people who are new Americans here. My family's been here for many hundred years, right? So I'm not, this is not something that affects me or my family. It does affect my partner, who is an immigrant. And I see how it affects, you know, how he moves about in the world, which is, it's hard to hear that you, that's the place you're starting from, and that I know there are other things you do in this body and have dropped bills to propose to do that. So I just would like to, like, spare us, please, because if it's not about dignity, please don't use that word, because it is a word that has some honor and respect. And I think if we're going to cite that that's where we're coming from, I'm just trying to understand, like, your holistic perspective. And understand your integrity and understand your, you know, dignity in being before this committee and taking you at your word. But I'm just having a hard time reconciling that. I think my last question, Chair, would be how many times are you going to bring a bill like this before our body? Because this is like the second one we've heard from you. And I think we've really made a point about the dignity of people and what we feel like this does to them. And we keep kind of going around in the same circles. And so in the, I guess, interest of using taxpayer dollars wise for everybody here and the lights that are on in the room, do you have any other bills that are going to do this that you'll bring for us?
Before you answer that, Representative Schultz, I'd like to remind the members that the rules of the floor on not questioning motive apply in committee hearings. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I actually didn't hear a question in regards to the bill that's before us, but I find it pretty interesting that we had a testifier here today, Mr. Chair, who is paid for by our tax dollars and is advocating for more money from taxpayers to go to people who are here in our nation illegally.
Chair Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I'm so sorry. Again, we're on the public record here, and I appreciate you, Chair, but the current law is that the people accessing this money are going through that legal process. And I just want that, I don't know, can we get to that same page and understanding? Because I would like to understand where you're coming from, but this committee has discussed this before. We talked about this on the House floor last year. I don't know how else to kind of reconcile that. We can't tell people that there's people getting access to this money, not going through that legal process, if like that's not happening. So I don't understand like how we are sitting here and trying to tell people that when you said it like four times, right? I want to make sure I'm understanding like you, where are you seeing this happen? That like we're not, this committee is not seeing that because the law says that they have to be going through that process. Am I missing something? Please help me.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe it's clear to the committee through the amount of money that is going through this program that there are people who do not have legal status and who are students that they would not meet the eligibility requirements under this bill. And as we move forward, I think it's also concerning that that there are people across this state and employers, maybe I should put it like that, that are employing over 70,000 people who do not have legal status in this country. That is taking away from American workers and American jobs. And at this moment, we are talking about this bill for the eligibility requirements for the state grant and for the North Star Promise program. And so more Minnesotans and more citizens, specifically and those with legal status, can benefit from this, from the overall programs if we have this eligibility requirement. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen, do you have a new question?
Same question stands. How? If you know how they are accessing this money, please tell me, because I would love to figure that out and get to the same page that you're on. I'm like actively trying to work together, Representative Schultz. I want to understand where you're seeing this and how we are not seeing it. And so how are they doing this, and what's did you talk to somebody who told you how they're doing it? Maybe you can help me understand like how you arrived at the knowledge that someone's doing this without our knowledge and against what the law says is required in order for this money to go out the door. Maybe that's a better question.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe from all of my reading of this, including what was passed during the 2023 legislature, I will just say that there were huge gaps to allow for people who are here in our country, in our state, illegally to gain access to public programs and receive financial aid.
Representative Hansen, do you have a new question?
No, I'll just leave it at that. I just think that it is on the record. Thank you, Chair. I appreciate you. I think it's on the record that we don't have any clear examples of how or stories of how or what's happening or what we can do as policymakers to close any of the gaps that are allowing this, because this bill is like a repetition of what the law already says. And I think that's what I'm struggling with. I remember you, one of my first committees, you told me we should not have duplications in the law. That was one of the things you said to me my very first time presenting. And so I'm trying to understand why you now are the one doing that, because I'm trying to learn. You've been here longer than me. And so I was just really genuinely trying to get to the bottom of, like, if you maybe went around the summer and you talked to a bunch of campuses and you like found a bunch of people and you got these stories to share, I would accept anecdotal or qualitative stories, like whatever it is. I don't know how we close this gap with this language if it's getting through the other language. I guess I don't know how we do that.
Vice Chair Coulter, you'll be up next. Chair Wongamott, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I just wanted to clarify what motion is before us, because I believe the initial motion was to send the bill to the General Register. But then I think you mentioned you were going to move to lay it over, or maybe you did lay it over. I just would like to clarify what motion is before us right now.
The motion will be to lay over.
Have you rescinded your? But right now, we're sending the bill to the GR, but you're going to change that after questioning?
We will change that to the layover in the absence of the fiscal note, yes.
Okay, thank you. I did then, Mr. Chair, want to just ask, you had mentioned that that fiscal staff did come back. It would be great if they know. It's kind of hard to have this whole discussion if the whole premise that Representative Schultz is bringing forward is that we're going to, by enacting his bill, we're going to save all this money because all these students are on here, but yet we don't have any numbers before us. So I appreciate that you're not, you know, that you're going to move to lay it over, but it's difficult to really get to the crux of the motive when we don't know. We don't have any numbers before us of how many students exactly this would impact, what the exact cost would be of savings. Is very pertinent to this whole discussion and the committee's time that we're spending today. So I just wanted to, you had mentioned that we had our fiscal staff come in. Otherwise, it just sort of feels like we're spinning in our wheels without any numbers behind the premise of why we're bringing this bill forward.
Thank you for the question, Chair Wolgamott. Does the fiscal staff wish to weigh in? Mr. Savvy.
Chair and members, just as a point of general information, the bill before us, House File 1323, does not have a fiscal note completed at this time. I believe there was mention of data that was for House File 10. The bills, while similar in nature, are just that, similar in nature. So while there may be some information that may be applicable from House File 10 to House File 1323, there may also be potential information from the inverse of not being as applicable, but they are similar in nature. So the committee can kind of decide how to weigh the pros and cons of that information.
Chair Wolgamott.
Thank you for that, Mr. Chair. Again, I want to ground this in the spirit, I guess, of if we're under the impression that this is a fiscal bill to save the state money. I'm wondering if there is anyone in the audience, whether it's from the systems or from OHE, who has any insights on the number of students that this would affect at their institutions.
Public testimony is closed. If it sounds like there may be someone in the committee room that might be able to answer your question, is there anyone in the committee room that could answer Chair Wolgamott's question? Hearing none, we'll move on with the testimony. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
For the record, my name is Megan Flores, and I'm the Director of State Financial Aid Programs at the Office of Higher Education. We have not received an updated request for a fiscal note for this bill. There's a fiscal note on file with staff from last year when the bill was originally introduced, so we don't have updated data yet.
Thank you. And your name?
Megan Flores.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Wolgemut?
First of all, I appreciate you as a person, as a colleague. I would ask that you have respect for my members and myself. When we're here to ask questions and get as much information as we can about this bill, and if you could please refrain from having commentary on questions, I would appreciate that. I will express that
Chair
it is.
Wolgemut, please, before that goes on, having no idea what you're talking about, please point out to me what I did. That's not being respectful, so I don't make that mistake again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've had big sighs, some laughing. You've had somewhat demeaning remarks to members. You asked Jess, Representative Hansen, if she could ask a different question, not for a fifth time. Just respectfully asking that we refrain from commentary like that and stick with the business before the committee.
Chair Wolgemut, I will keep that in mind. I will do
Thank
my
you.
Best to not sigh, and I will turn the mic off. I'm sorry that I'm breathing into the mic. It's a lot more live mic than we have in public safety.
Fair enough. I appreciate that. And again, I appreciate you and know that's not your intention. So thank you. I will say that it is frustrating that the whole premise of bringing this bill forward is we're going to save all this money and make sure we get all this money going to where it's going to be benefiting certain people. But we don't have any of the numbers. We don't know how many students this would impact. We don't know how much money this would save. It just feels like a frustrating presentation to pit students against each other. And I feel like that without those numbers, without that data, this is a frustrating waste of the committee's time. But now that I've shared that, thank you. We can move on to other members.
Thank you, Chair Wolgemut. Vice Chair Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the clarification on what the plan is for this bill. That was the first question I was going to ask. So, Representative Schultz, I would like to clarify something because you have done this a couple of times and one of your testifiers did as well. You drew a distinction between people who are undocumented and Minnesotans. And most recently, you drew a distinction between people who are undocumented and, quote, Minnesota kids. So I think we need to be clear for the public. Are people who are undocumented Minnesotans?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That doesn't relate to the bill.
Vice Chair Coulter.
Well, I think that was a good enough answer, Representative Schultz. And I would say I think based on what we've seen these last few months, the people of Minnesota certainly do believe that folks who are undocumented are Minnesotans. So the second question I had to you, I just wanted to make sure I heard you correctly. You said approximately 2.6 million from the state grant. Mm-hmm. And okay, thank you. I wanted to make sure I got that number right, because while we don't know how many students this would impact, we do know how many students get the state grant. And it's approximately 120,000 students. So you take 2.6 million divided by 120,000, and we have given every state grant recipient on average another $21. I think it's a little bit disingenuous, frankly, to advertise this as this is how we're going to save the state grant. This is how we're going to make sure that folks can afford college by putting another $21 in their pockets. My last question, Representative Schultz, do you know approximately how much undocumented folks pay in state and local taxes in Minnesota?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just say to this greater point that you are seeking to make that I am about enforcing the law. And those who have not come here legally have broken the law. And I don't believe that state taxpayer dollars should go to further benefit the people who have already broken the law.
Vice Chair Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I can actually answer the question that I did ask you, and the answer is $222 million. So we are balancing I guess you could call it a savings of $2.6 million on over $200 million that undocumented folks pay in state and local taxes. I'll be honest, I don't get it. The numbers don't add up, they don't balance, the money doesn't make sense. This bill targets people who are going to college, who are getting an education, to better contribute to our state, to our economy, to our future. I don't get it. And I'm not going to ask you to explain anything. You've said enough about why you're bringing the bill. It is bad money sense. It is bad policy.
Care to respond, Representative Schultz?
No, sir.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Schultz, I don't really have a question for you, but I just want to say a couple things, in part because of some of the things that were said by the testifiers who came in support of your bill. And we've been talking a lot about, you know, what this bill does, and you mentioned Minnesotans and being fair to Minnesotans, or some people said that. You know, I think that based, especially after what Representative Coulter just said about the value of what people bring, you know, I think we're looking at what is good for Minnesota and Minnesotans way too narrowly. So we on this committee deal with higher education. Hopefully the members of this committee understand the value of being educated. This is not a private good. When we give somebody a grant, it is not because it is a private benefit to them. It's because it's a public benefit to all of us, to have people in our state who are educated, who can fill the jobs of the future. That's what we are about. That is why we invest taxpayer money in this at all, frankly. And we do invest a lot of taxpayer money in it. And we have people here who are just as Minnesotan as everyone else, but because of a pure accident of birth, they don't have the same status as many of us. Pure accident of birth. And so what we're really talking about here, I think, and what has been alluded to by Representative Hansen and others, is that in our statute, I think it refers specifically to the DACA students, right? That's what we're talking about. The students who are, there are requirements in our law in order to be eligible for a state grant, that these students have to be fulfilling, basically doing everything they can do. And by definition, these are students who came here as children. They are not responsible. They're not lawbreakers. They were born wherever they were born, and their parents brought them here, or they got here as children, and they're doing everything they can do. And anyone in this room could be in that situation. Did you pick your family? Did you pick where you were born? I don't think so. Not you or me or any of us got to pick. And these students we're talking about did not choose to not have legal status. And they are doing everything they are asked to do that they can possibly do to get legal status. So that is who this bill is targeting, Representative Schultz. That's who we're talking about here. And these are students who, If the Trump administration doesn't drag them out of a car and deport them to a country they don't remember, they will grow up here, they will be part of our workforce, they will live among us, they are Minnesotans. And we all hope that they will be able to contribute to our economy as immigrants do now, and that they will, you know, these are the most driven, most talented students. They have gotten to this point through their own initiative and hard work. So, you know, we as Minnesotans, I think we value education. We understand that we need people who are here, who have good values, who want to work hard. And so what this bill is doing is it is essentially blaming immigrants. And I just want to, some of the folks who testified, you know, I hear in your testimony that you are blaming immigrants for your difficulty paying for your education. And that is so misplaced. It is so misplaced. I know it's easy and popular to pick out somebody to blame when we're having difficulty, when our economy isn't what it's supposed to be, But we are seeing right now, as immigrants are ripped out of our state and ripped out of our economy, we're seeing that as hurting our economy, not helping it. Things are getting worse, not better. So we need to see people among us not as competitors, but as partners in trying to build up and have a good society that helps everyone. And Representative Schultz, when you were answering Representative Hicks, you were talking about, you know, what is the meaning of this otherwise not lawfully present? And you said they're not in a lawful process. Well, those are very different things. We're talking about people who are covered by our bill, our current program, who are in a lawful process. That's what Representative Hansen was telling you there. We only give these grants to people who are in a lawful process. They are doing everything they can do. So for those of you students in the room and so on who are, you know, think that immigrants are to blame because your education is too expensive, that is so misplaced. You know, some countries actually have free education, higher education for everybody, and some states have actually had that in the past. And what do we see right now? You know, we see the problem in our economy is not the immigrants among us. You know, we are seeing billions of dollars sucked out of our economy and into the very few hands. The people at the very, very top are getting richer and richer and richer, and all that money that they are accumulating is therefore unavailable in our economy for things like education. We all agree education should be cheaper. If it were up to me and I could wave the wand, education would be free, higher education, to every Minnesota student who wants it, because it is a public good. But the money is not there right now for us to do that, and it is getting worse because that money is being sucked out of the economy. And in fact, we're now spending $1 billion a day, $1 billion dropping bombs on Iran. Imagine that, what that $1 billion a day could be doing in our country.
Representative Liebling, I'd like to remind you that the bill before the committee is 1323.
So Mr. Chair, thank you for the reminder. I was just going to finish up. I know it's sometimes uncomfortable to think about the values that are being represented in this bill, which are really bad values, I believe. But, you know, I think, and a lot of us think, a lot of Minnesotans think, that education should be available to everyone who has the ability and drive to seek it, not because of accidents of your birth that you had absolutely no control over. And, you know, that is what I think, and that is why this bill is really a bad bill, and would never vote for this bill. And I don't care the sort of things that are said, and, you know, because people want to blame immigrants, and that is so misplaced. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, I've been on the list, but I have a constituent outside, so I'm going to have to run in just a second. But I think it would help us to hear from a nonpartisan exactly how this bill works, because there's been a lot of controversy in the questioning, and I honestly just want to make sure I'm understanding it. So my understanding of the bill is that people who are here without citizenship, but they meet residency requirements and they have graduated from a Minnesota high school, even if they're not here legally, are the ones who are eligible currently to get state aid. So if someone could just answer for me. So what this bill does is says if you are not here legally, you no longer qualify for state aid. Is that what we're talking about?
Mr. Hopkins?
Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins and members. So there is a bill summary on this bill that's posted online. I don't think it was printed and put in member packets. There's also a short subject on financial aid eligibility for undocumented students in Minnesota that's linked to in that bill summary. In general, since 2013, when the Minnesota legislature passed the Prosperity Act, which is also known as the Minnesota Dream Act, undocumented students in Minnesota can be eligible for in-state tuition rates and state financial aid if they meet certain criteria, which is in section 135A.043. They have to meet all of the following requirements: high school attendance within the state for 3 or more years, graduation from a state high school or attainment within the state of the equivalent high school graduation, and 3, in the case of a student without lawful immigration status, they have to register for the draft if that's applicable. And the second requirement is that if a federal process exists for the student to obtain lawful immigration status, the student must present documentation from federal immigration authorities that the student has filed an application to obtain lawful immigration status. So under that statute, undocumented students, if they meet these eligibility criteria, can receive in-state tuition rates and state financial aid. What this bill does in Section 1 is it, by notwithstanding any law to the contrary, overrides that section and provides that non-citizens of the United States who are undocumented or otherwise not lawfully present are not eligible for any state financial aid.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Savory. I'm sorry.
Hopkins.
Mr. Hopkins. I'm sorry, Mr. Hopkins. I was looking at his nameplate. So the words you read already contain that phrase, not lawfully present, in the underlying statute, if what I heard was correct. So we are referencing that same definition of not lawfully present.
Mr. Hopkins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Robbins, so Section 135A.043, that's the Minnesota DREAM Act or Prosperity Act statute, says that in the case of a student without lawful immigration status, they have to, if a federal process exists for the student to obtain lawful immigration status, they have to present documentation from federal immigration authorities that they have filed an application to obtain lawful immigration status. That is the current statute.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. And so is there a legal or common accepted definition of not lawful immigration status?
Mr. Hopkins.
In terms of how that is administered by the office, I think that would be a better question to pose to the Office of Higher Education.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Someone from OHEO around over there to come and address that.
Please state your name again for the record.
For the record, my name is Megan Flores. I'm the Director of State Financial Aid Programs. Can you repeat your question?
Yes, thank you. So when you are administering the current law, and it says students who do not have lawful immigration status, and then it goes through the other things that, you know, are the requirement under 135A.043. What do you consider someone who does not have lawful immigration status?
So if you're looking at
Flores.
Apologies, Chair. Chair, Representative, if you're looking at the statute 135A.043 in Section 3 of the law, it only applies to Section 3 where we need to look at that. And so that would be a student who cannot present a lawful immigration status. We do require them to, and their male as identified at birth, they do apply for selective service. And so that's how we're following that. As far as how we determine what is a lawful immigration status, we do ask the student to present the documentation. And if they're unable to, that's when we ask them to register for selective service.
Got it.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. That's very helpful. So it's something that you ask about that they could document if they have documents. And if they don't, then they're considered here without lawful immigration status.
That is correct.
Director Flores.
Chair, excuse me. Chair and Representative, yes, that is correct. So the student then registers with Selective Service and can be called up to duty.
Thank you. And if they choose...
Representative Robbins.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair. And if they don't register for Selective Service, then they do not qualify for the North Star and the state grant. They have to do that in order to qualify.
Director Flores.
Chair and Representative, that is correct. If the student chooses not to register with Selective Service, they are not eligible for state financial aid under 135A043 for any forms of state financial aid.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you. Last question. So just to be clear, for you, this is not opaque. You know, you asked for what's their status. If they cannot document it, they're considered not having lawful immigration status, and they can still qualify for the program if they're registered for selective service. But if not, they're not here with lawful immigration status. And so in your view, that's, you feel comfortable with how to judge whether someone's here legally or not.
Director Flores.
Chair and Representative, when needed, we do consult with immigration attorneys, but typically a student will know if they have documentation or do not.
Okay.
Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I appreciate that. I'm just going to end with a quick comment because I've already prolonged my poor constituents out there for too long, but I do want to just thank all the testifiers who have been here, and I find it unfortunate that the some testifiers were accused of blaming people for their struggles, which are real, of how to afford their education. And I've not seen that in my 8 years here, where someone attacks a testifier, and I find that very unfortunate for the committee and for the body, and I just want to say that. And for all the testifiers, everyone is struggling. These kids are struggling to afford their education, and Minnesotans are struggling. And the issue is that they are being taxed and regulated to death in this state. They're driven out of this state. We talk about how the money could be used differently, $9 billion in fraud and counting. Like, all of that money, because of policy failures, is making it hard for families to afford their education in this state. And I find it very disconcerting that the testifiers come here in good faith to say how they are being impacted by policies we make here. And I just want to thank the testifiers on both sides for coming. Thank you.
Thank you, members. We do have another bill up today, so we will be tabling this motion no later than 2:30. Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to clarify and just get an answer to one quick question. Does this apply that the Minnesota Dream Act will no longer exist?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's an important question to ask, Representative Knorr. I have heard, even from House Research, how this would supersede it. So based upon the description that I've heard just in the dialogue today, I think that might be the case. But that's just based upon what I've heard today from the researchers.
Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz, don't you think that is wrong? You know, students who came here at no fault of their own, who went through the regular school, and now we're telling them that, yep, you did all these things, you are a dreamer, we don't care anything about you. Does that mean that we don't care about those students who are doing everything that we told them to do, and now we're telling them we don't care about you?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Knorr. I think the distinction that is super important for our conversation this afternoon is the difference between access and financial aid. That is the difference. And in that way, that's probably where the Minnesota Dream Act still exists, because for our conversation, there's a difference between providing additional taxpayer-supported financial aid and providing access to go to a Minnesota higher education institution. To me, that is the distinguishing point. And so to that end, what I am stating with this bill is that it's the financial aid that should not flow to the folks without legal status.
Representative Knorr.
Mr. Chair, so that child that we've allowed to go through K-12, we paid for it because those kids came here at no fault of their own. They are planning to become contributing members of the society by going through the college. And I think over the last few months, we've learned a lot. That people who are Minnesota residents, who are being targeted for who they are, just basically because they're immigrants, because of the color of their skin, because of their accent, it's because we otherize other communities who are our neighbors, people who are actually contributing, getting nothing back. And when we take away something simple that they want to strive to become contributors to the state of Minnesota, this is nothing short of denying people because we don't want them. I've never seen any place whereby we otherwise other individuals. Sometimes we need just to look into the eye of that young child who's a dreamer, who wants to succeed, and tell them, you don't belong here. There's nothing for you here. Then you'll understand their struggles. We're talking about the DACA students who are trying to actually adjust. Our federal government has failed us in terms of the immigration process. We should have had a process for them to become lawful residents. But none of them are willing to do the hard job. We're stuck with those kids who are Minnesotans, and we are proud to say that if you're here as a resident in the state of Minnesota, we will support you to become someone who is contributing to their society, to be able to get the education that they need so that we can be proud of them as they strive to live among us. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Duran.
Can I have someone from OHE come back up here, please, if they're able to?
Who is their request for?
OHE.
Please state your name again before he asks you the question.
Nikki Oliver, Director of Government Relations for the Office of Higher Education.
Representative Duran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we provide any extra services for people that are coming over here that might be undocumented, that may not know English or any of that stuff? Would it be, I mean, do we have any struggles inside our state institutions right now because of some of these barriers that might happen that may be better for us to have these people kind of assimilate to our society first before we start throwing them into a college?
Ms. Oliver?
Chair, Representative, I'm going to try to answer your questions. Part of that seems very philosophical, and I won't be able to answer that. But there are services that the state provides for new immigrants and new Americans. There's an entire office. Our office also have staff that try to help students through their processes if they have questions. And we do have some staff that are bilingual and can help in that way, and or we will point them to other services if necessary.
Representative Duran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's one of the things too, when we talk about you know, making things suitable for everybody, and you know, when we talk about education and whatnot, sometimes it's very hard for people to come over here, because I know I've had friends that immigrated over here, and it was very hard for them to adjust to the way that our government is set up and the way that our system is set up, and it took them quite a few years to be able to establish that. And I'm worried that, you know, as soon as these individuals just come here, we throw them into, an organization that they're not used to, we might be actually setting them up for failure. So I just maybe pump the brakes a little bit on this. But, you know, that's my question for you. I have no more for you. Thank you. I don't mean to put you in a bad spot here, but I worry about that sort of thing. And then just a couple last comments here. You know, I don't think we're blaming anybody. I don't think our side of the aisle is blaming anybody for doing any of this stuff. You know, it's funny how, you know, it's just, we all live a certain life, and, you know, my grandmother, she didn't learn English until she was 5-6 years old. So, I mean, she had to work hard. She got what she needed to be successful in life. But it took her time, and she'd be one to tell you that, you know, getting thrown into a certain, education span that they're not used to may not set them up for success. So I would just caution us when we start to just automatically take these people in and throw them right into a college, we may be doing more detriment to them. So I appreciate you for bringing this bill up. Thank you very much.
Representative Allen, you're last up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad I get to play clean or hit cleanup, I guess. So, in the spirit of baseball in this time of year, I had a question for either OHE or for Representative Schultz. And I was just kind of wondering how many states currently allow undocumented students to be able to receive state aid?
Representative Schultz, you know that answer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think that I have the full scope of it. I know that it varies around the state, around the country, and there are not many that provide those sorts of benefits.
Representative Allen.
And Representative Schultz is correct on that. There are only 10 states that currently allow undocumented students to receive state aid for college. It kind of varies depending on policy and whatnot, but only 10 do that in the United States. I guess I'd go back to something Representative Liebling said that I agree with her on. She is right. Things are getting worse, not better. We take a look at what's currently going on and how much money we have in the Minnesota Grants Program and the North Star Promise. And it is a ship with a hole in the side of it about the size of a semi, and we're trying to take and plug the hole with a piece of bubble gum. And right now, as it stands, our constituents are looking to us to be able to try to find a way to be able to balance the books, make sure that we can follow through on promises that we've committed to, but yet not raise their taxes in the process. I'm sure all of us are hearing from our constituents, whether or not you're looking at your property taxes or seeing school levies and what's being leveraged back against us and in our communities and how unaffordable things are getting for our constituents. So I appreciate you, Representative Schultz, for bringing this forward. We're trying to look for options and as far as what we can do to be able to make these programs work and last. And just appreciate that, and hopefully we can come up with other options to try to be able to make sure we follow through on these promises. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, House File 132, Chair Wolgamott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. final word representing the House DFL side. I'm grateful that you're changing the motion to lay it over. If we were to vote on sending this bill forward, I would be asking members to vote no. I feel like, especially given what we heard 2 weeks ago from the students who came and testified about the impact of ICE on campus, that students throughout our colleges, particularly students of color, are feeling otherized. And I feel like this bill right now, especially without any numbers, is really an unfortunate timing and an unfortunate waste of the committee's time. And I want to speak directly to the students who would be impacted by this so-called solution in search of a problem. Just know how much we appreciate all of your hard work. We appreciate all that you're doing to better yourself in your education, and we appreciate the economic value you're bringing to the state of Minnesota. So with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate all of the member discussion and all of the testifiers. I would be asking members for a no vote, but I'm grateful that we're laying it over. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Moeller. With that, what do I call you, Moeller? Chair Wolgamott.
It happens all the time, Mr. Chair.
Bill 1323 is laid over. Next bill up is bill number 3500. It's Representative Duran. Representative Duran, I understand that we have some testifiers on Zoom. House File 3500 from Duran will be laid over. Representative Duran, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this is a very good bill, something that we all can come together on and maybe agree on, that we're going to help our colleges now. Now that we got that bill out of the way, we can get to something that might actually help, you know, college out here. So this bill actually provides one-time appropriation of $800,000 from the state general fund to BSU to help revitalize the campus here. And with that being said, I will pass it over to my testifiers.
First up to testify is Dr. John Hoffman, president of Bemidji State. Mr. Hoffman, are you there?
Yes, I am.
And it worked. Begin your testimony, Mr. President Hoffman.
Yes, so Chair Novotny and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to be here today. When I arrived at Bemidji State and Northwest Tech approximately 4 years ago, it was on the tails of the COVID pandemic. Our enrollment had dropped substantially, and we were facing a collective deficit of $13 million on a $70 million budget. We knew at that time that we would have to make very difficult decisions in the coming years. I am proud of our community for coming together, prioritizing students as the area that where we would grow as we work through that process. As of this spring, we have added more than 640 students between our two institutions, an increase of 14%, 17% new student increase at Bemidji State, a 75% increase at the Technical College. And these are paired with increases from 70 to 77% in our retention rate and substantial increases in fundraising, more than tripling and almost quadrupling the dollars invested by alumni and members of our community into the institution. And I'm happy to say, well, first let me acknowledge the difficulty, because over the past 3 years, we reduced the instructional faculty and employees at our institution by approximately 30%. But last year, we ended the year with a deficit collective between the two institutions of approximately $350,000. Not quite balanced, but pretty close. With adjustments, however, with difficult decisions about appropriations for this biennium, reductions that came to Minnesota State and then to BSU and NTC, we entered the summer with yet again work to do. On June 21st, a derecho storm came through the Bemidji community. Sustained winds of 90 to 120 miles per hour across a 10-mile swath in northern Minnesota devastated our community. 60,000 individuals were without power for between 3 and 5 days. There was substantial damage to buildings and homes, and literally millions of trees were lost in northern Minnesota. Specifically at Bemidji State and NTC, we all but three of our buildings sustained damage to our roofs. We had damage to approximately 1,800 windows. More than 100 of those windows were fully broken, requiring immediate response, others requiring repair. We also lost 200 trees from our two campuses. This is particularly important. Bemidji State is the university in the Pines. It is the name of our history, the identity of our institution. In Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes and 12 public universities, there is only one public university located on the shores of a lake and in the northern woods of Minnesota. And I am happy to say that the members of the community have rallied together, and that is for the community, the region, and also for our two institutions. The work of our facility staff, some of whom have reported to the House Higher Ed Committee, testified, was truly exemplary. I am speaking to you today from Kansas City. This morning, Bemidji State had been identified by a higher education professional association as a model for crisis response, for our response to the storms last summer. While that is great news, and I'm proud to share that story, the impact of the storm and the trees, the loss of trees in particular on our campus, continues. And so I will close shortly, but before I do, I wish to hand things off to Dr. Jim Harding, who is professor for our brand new forestry program. It is a one-of-a-kind forestry program in the country that requires students to complete their first 2 years at either Vermilion or Itasca College, part of Minnesota North College, and then they complete their degree through this special partnership at Bemidji State. Dr. Harding has been a valuable addition to our university, part of the growth in the midst of difficult times, and he brings expertise in terms of forestry and the importance of reforesting our campus.
Now I have Dr. James Harding, Associate Professor of Forestry, also by Zoom. Mr. Harding, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Begin your testimony after stating your name, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairperson Novotny, and good afternoon to the committee members. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Jim Harding. I'm newly hired faculty member at BSU, and I was hired specifically to build, deliver, and grow a new Bachelor's of Science degree in forest management. I've made a career sharing with others the value and importance of our forests and trees. As a forester for over 30 years and across six different states, I've grown accustomed to what we call stand-replacing disturbances, things like wildfire, insects and disease, and yes, wind. All of these are well-known and researched events in forest ecology, and they play an important role in the dynamics of forest succession. But the impact is less fully understood when this impact affects an urban forest. And we do refer to this as an urban forest. Perhaps it's an odd term for those of you familiar with Bemidji, but this is a forest that's characterized by an overlap and intersection with infrastructure, facilities, and most importantly, people. Over the course of my career, my chainsaw and I have cut many trees. But this number is easily dwarfed by the number of trees that my shovel and I have planted. I've planted seedlings by the thousands, saplings by the hundreds, and I've been fortunate enough to be part of planting perhaps half a dozen mature trees. When the goal is to reforest a big natural area, there's good reason to plant large numbers of seedling-sized trees, letting them grow and outcompete their neighbors over the span of decades. Reforesting an urban environment, however, requires a different approach. In many cases, we're hoping to quickly regain the benefits of the trees that were lost, gathering spots for shade, nesting sites for birds and mammals, and that deep sort of reverence that we can only get from a majestic, mature tree. But this is not just about the initial cost or expediency of the near term. Now, it is true that planting mature, spaded trees will require less maintenance and care during those first few years following planting. Additionally, survivability rates of mature trees are far greater than those rates for seedling and sapling sized trees. But more importantly, over the longer term, these open grown seedlings and saplings in an urban forest will never become the large, shapely canopy trees that we lost in the storm. To the extent that we are hoping to reclaim a forest canopy across campus, reforesting through the planting of larger diameter spaded trees really is the best approach. In 2006, the U.S. Forest Service developed a program called iTree. It can be used to tell you a specific tree's dollar value based on certain measures such as carbon sequestration, clean air and water benefits, the reduced heating and cooling costs when trees are adjacent to buildings. Across all of these measures and others, the same conclusion emerges. Bigger trees are better and more valuable. But this does not account for the non-market value of trees, which is really where many of the benefits of a reforested campus will be realized. I'm reminded of taking my young son and daughter on walks through our woods in Vermont many years ago, and as a professor, maybe trying to teach them too much about how to identify tree species and what the importance was and what value each tree held. When finally my daughter looked at me and said, "I don't know what it is, but can't I just like it?" Well, it's hard to argue with that sort of sentiment, even from a six-year-old. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Harding. Questions for Representative Duran? Chair Wolgamott? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. So for, thank you, Representative Duran. I came up for just a couple hours, was able to make it to help with some cleanup, but I'm little, so I'm not much help, but it was a disaster up there. I saw the trees. I had gone up to visit up at Red Lake shortly after, and coming back, I mean, it was devastating to see how bad the damage was. So I hope everything is starting to recover well. I think my question, though, stands for just the cost here. We had a lot of tree lovers in our caucus, including some of our dearly beloved Spirke Emerita, and she kind of taught us how much trees cost. And so I'm just kind of bringing that and carrying that with me right now. It seems like a lot of money for this amount of trees, and I wanted to just touch base and see, like, if, you know, that's 30% of what the last bill was asking to allegedly capture. So trying to understand why this amount and where does this come from? And I'm kind of just curious, like, we keep hearing about how we don't have much money for this or that or this or that. You know, I want to plant trees, don't get me wrong. Like, I totally do. But, you know, I've also been poor my whole life. So, like, if you don't have money, you don't have money. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out is, like, how are you proposing that we pay for this? Is there a cut you're proposing to make to something else? And where is that going to come from?
Representative Duran, would you like to take that question, or do you want to go to the doctors?
In regards to where it's coming from, it's just a one-time, you know, obviously coming from the general fund would be my ask here. We do have some money there. I know it's not a lot, but it would be, you know, going towards the good things. And for the cost, I would like to refer to my testifiers.
President Hoffman?
Yes, so Chair Novotny and Representative Hansen, in coming to an estimate for this with working with Representative Duran, we had approximately $100,000 in costs that were not covered by insurance, et cetera, for buildings, et cetera. This ranged from deductible to overtime to also the need to bring in an external expert to assess the landscape and a landscape architect for the trees. The remaining $700,000, we used the value of a spaded tree, or the cost of a spaded tree is approximately $3,500 at 200 trees would be $700,000. And so that brings the total to the $800,000 ask that is being made.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I'm in a little bit of shock from that answer. I'm sorry. I might need a second to look at that. I would hope that if we are going to do this, that we understand what the, like, not just the financial cost, but, like, the impact. And again, like, I get it. I want to plant all the trees I can, of course. But I would think this committee would probably want to see a site plan and take a peek at, like, what that looks like. And I also have got to better understand why $3,500 a tree, that feels exorbitant to me. And so I would hope that as we do this, you know, we can have conversations about that. And if you're going to trim from somewhere else, I think we should at least talk about kind of how we're going to balance that out. So thank you, Chair.
Representative Duran, would you like to respond briefly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, I was a bit surprised on how much these trees are going to cost to begin with. But spaded trees, I think they go anywhere between 40 to 60 feet. And they last a little bit longer with a little bit less care, obviously, up front. So what we're doing is we're trying to work on the maintenance and cut back on the cost of the state university. And for the amount of trees that we'll be able to survive, this is a better option for us to go. And the transportation and the costs, because they are, you know, big spaded trees, those big trucks that dig into the ground, that's what we'd be doing here. So,
Representative Schwartz, and I'm told we've got a hard time of 2:48, so we have approximately 3 minutes. Ooh.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Duran, can you please tell me how does Bemidji State contribute to the workforce pipeline in northern Minnesota?
Representative Duran?
Absolutely, but I think that'd be better set by my testifier, but I can sure try. I mean, if if he wants to try it.
Let's go to Representative Cleavorn. And
so I just, we're laying this over, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
One of the questions, Mr. Chair, that I would like to know is when the... Oh. I'm sorry, I don't know.
Sorry. Representative Schwartz, do you have a follow-up?
I'm sorry, I thought you recognized me.
I did.
Apology.
My fault.
No, I was just waiting for my answer for my question on how Bemidji State contributes to the workforce pipeline in northern Minnesota.
I can't understand.
They were supposed to go to a testifier.
Mr. Hoffman.
Yes, Chair Novotny and Representative Schwartz. Bemidji State, unlike most of the rest of the state, represents a very large territory. It is 100 miles to the west, 140 to the south or to the east, and 200 miles to the north until you get to the next four-year university. And so we are the workforce provider of northern Minnesota. I could certainly provide specific data, but I assure you that in terms of the workforce in northern Minnesota, Bemidji State is essential in ways that is not experienced elsewhere in the state.
Representative Schwartz, is that enough?
Yes, that is enough. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Duran, for bringing this bill forward. Thank you.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you. And I want to just thank the author for bringing the bill forward. I'm a huge supporter of the trees. I understand the aesthetic and the comfort and the identity that comes with the trees. What I would like, before we would move this out of committee, I would really like for you to be able to tell us at some point, it doesn't have to be now because I know we're at a hard stop. The Minnesota State System said they preferred money on HEPR. And so just if we can have a private conversation later to balance that those two needs. Thank you.
Chair Wolgamott.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask the author if you've considered putting this in a bonding request. You mentioned that we're looking to get this from the general fund. The bonding committee regularly approves requests for tree funding. Would you consider bringing it in bonding?
Representative
Chair Duran
and stepping to the counter, please identify yourself.
I do, Bernie Oman, Minnesota State. I do not believe that trees are bondable, and when it's not with something else. So that is one of the cases, and be happy to talk about the system's priorities at a later date.
Representative Wolgamott. Chair Wolgamott.
That's all for this bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, we'll be laying Bill 3500 over.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Wolgamott.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to follow up from something I'd said earlier and just thank you for your leadership in this committee. And I want to make clear for the record that I know that your intention was never anything less than giving all members of this committee the utmost respect. So I just wanted to thank you for your leadership in chairing the committee today.
Thank you, Chair. members, our plan is to meet next on Thursday, March 12th, 2026. Thank you, members and nonpartisan, for being here. Meeting's now adjourned.